Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty. On a Sunday night, ready for Monday delivery. Got a lot to talk about on the news side, because on the sporting side, we did have a fight night. Mackenzie Dern and Marina Rodriguez in a nice five-round affair last night. We'll talk about that and the card that had a lot of shifts and changes and I believe went all the way down to nine fights. One historical note coming from that card as well. We'll talk about that. We'll unpack the card. Talk about the main storylines from that card, and then hit that news that I was talking about, like Joe Riggs over at BKFC. He broke Melvin Gallard's orbital bone, so it's not MMA, but folks, those are MMA athletes competing in bare knuckle. Also, in the boxing world, for many years, they kept saying the baddest man on the planet is the heavyweight champion, which in this case is Tyson Fury. He defended his belts against Deontay Wilder on Saturday night, so we'll talk about that fight. Of course, that's something they used to say back then. We know who the baddest man on the planet is. I think there's no doubt it's the MMA heavyweight championship, usually the UFC heavyweight champion, which in this case is Deontay Wilder. Go ahead, you can challenge me on that one. I'd love to debate it. James Krause says he made a coaching mistake. We'll cover that. Luis Pena arrested again. Goes and I hit up Dan Henderson two times. Once to pay him a visit, catch some fighters off guard. Second time to check out Hendo's Fight Night 6. Lots more, some fight bookings, lots to talk about. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday night, October 10th, for your Monday delivery, October 11th. Goes, you decide UFC or the news, which one you want?
UFC.
All right, so UFC took place on Saturday night. It was a fight night broadcasted on ESPN Plus. Nine fights total. We'll go through the results real quick and then we'll zero in on the big ones. Steve Garcia defeated Charlie Ontiveros. TKO stoppage there in round two. Lupita Godinez defeated Silvana Gomez Juarez, and that was a submission armbar in round one. Damon Jackson defeated Charles Rosa, a unanimous decision. They went all three rounds. Alexander Romanov stopped Jared Vander Aa in round two of their fight. Some ground and pound took care of that. Chris Gutierrez defeated Felipe Collares. Split decision there needed for to render a winner. Maria Agapova defeated Sabina Mato. Let me tell you something, Goes. Maria Agapova. Check out as many interviews as she does, man, especially when she's mad. She's actually pretty colorful.
The gangster.
She submitted Mato in round three via rear naked choke. Jeez, that was the minor infliction of damage, because the big right hand that she delivered was actually, yeah, just like Ghost said, it was gangster. Matias Nicolau defeated Tim Elliott. Unanimous decision, three rounds. I mentioned James Krause earlier. That'll come into play when we discuss that. It cost me some money too, man. Randy Brown defeated Jared Gooden. Three-round decision there. Marina Rodriguez defeated Mackenzie Dern in the main event. It was a five-round decision, and it was pretty one-sided. Mackenzie Dern did take one round from Rodriguez. She appeared to take the rest. So, let me see. From the bottom, I just want to, you know, kind of move quickly there. The Leech, Damon Jackson, Charles Rosa, both guys been in our studio. I was rooting for both guys to just have a great fight and win 50K. I thought Jared Vander Aa was going to turn it around if he could just get that heavy Romanian off of Romanov. I thought maybe he could tough it out, Goes, and that Romanov would then gas, and maybe Vander Aa would have a shot to do something in late in round two or round three, but Romanov was relentless. And Then we get to Agapova and Mato. Agapova, man, that was maybe the best punch of the night, and that includes Fury and Wilder. I mean, a straight right hand to Sabina Mato's jaw, who she was already off balance, knocked her down. And I don't even think Mato knew that her back was taken. She was already in La La Land, but that's why we get an official submission instead of a TKO stoppage. I think she could have just walked off after that, after socking her in the jaw, and she would have been pretty good. All right, you want to discuss any of those before we get to the top three?
Well, that noise, you know, just from connecting to the jaw, that
right,
it was brutal. And I think you're right. I think she probably could have walked off. She might have. The problem was Mato kind of landed in a position where the referee probably wouldn't have been able to see her eyes roll back or anything like that. But I thought it was pretty interesting that she went for that choke right away. You know, because if it were me, I think had I already connected that way, I probably would have landed a little bit of ground and pound. But the submission just went right away, and it's a great win. I feel bad for Sabina Mato because there are times where she shows that she can be a pretty good fighter, but then there are times where she just shows these holes in her game. And it just sucks when that gets exploited in front of so many people. She's got to go back into the laboratory and figure this one out.
I agree. And, you know, she came from a lot of fanfare from LFA with those two head kick KOs. She came from a camp that has a lot of, it was during a time when the camp had a lot of historical significance. You know, Kevin Gastelum was competing for a world title. Fabricio Werdum, Rafael Dos Anjos, you know, they had their runs under Master Rafael Cordero. And so, I think Mato just had a big spotlight on her, you know. And look, I'm not saying she'll never be champ. It's just that right now she's showing she still has a lot of holes to fill. She, you know, I've often said if you get her to the ground, you probably, if you have a formidable ground game, you'll have a good opportunity to win the fight that way. If you want to strike with her, okay, look, she's got some skills. But Sabina Mato, I think, has to become more athletic. What does that mean? It means more explosive, more fast twitch. And I've seen a lot of fighters be able to do that, actually become, you know, more explosive. It takes a lot of work, but I think it can be done if she can do it. She's got techniques. I just think sometimes she lacks the explosion, and so she kind of has to hit you with volume a little. But that's not always going to get it done if somebody also has the techniques and the explosion like Agapova.
No, I agree.
You know, remember Michael Bisping? They went so far as to even call him pillow hands at one point. And mm-hmm. Then towards the end of his career, he was actually, I mean, even throw the Luke Rockhold fight aside, he actually had developed some skills where he was starting to hurt some people. You know, he was never going to have one punch power like Fedor, for example. But still, to go from somebody that was labeled as pillow hands to now somebody that won the UFC world middleweight title based off of KOing his opponent. You know, that's a testament into putting in some work and becoming more formidable with your boxing.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody's a knockout artist. I think if, even if you, I know we're going to get into it eventually, but we're going to get into some boxing. Look at some of the champions throughout history in that sport. Not everybody has been known to be a knockout artist, and you have to have a certain fight style. And, sometimes that the KO punch is there, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have to do a little bit fight, kind of like how Michael Bisping would fight to open up those opportunities. But, it's hard to ever say that somebody just doesn't hit hard. I think they all have the capability of hitting hard. I just think a lot of them choose not to maybe go for that type of attack.
Could be, yeah. We'll see if Mato can turn it around. Right now, I just hope her jaw is not broken and obviously get through the holidays, start fresh in 2022, and start on a new run. That's all you can do is dust yourself off, start on a new run. Okay, so the top three fights, Nick and Mateus Nicolau defeated Tim Elliott. You know, this one, it doesn't have the immediate title contention type of weight. It doesn't carry that because we know that Moreno and Figueroa are going to fight again. We know that Pantoja's in the mix. We know that Askarov is in the mix. So Nicolau obviously is going to have to fight somebody else before he can even say, I got either next or I want to challenge whoever has next. He's just not, he's not there yet. But it was still a good win over a respected flyweight. Nicolau actually talked about that respect. He said he kind of grew up idolizing Elliot. Elliot, of course, was part of the season that brought in the flyweights, you know, stacked them up a little bit, but they brought in a lot of lightweight champions. So not necessarily the flyweight division, but the fly, you know, they wanted to add some talent to the lightweight division. And so the winner got to fight the champion, which was Demetrius Johnson at the time. So remember, the UFC brought in 16 champions, and Elliott, I believe, was a Titan FC champ. Everybody agreed that was the nicest belt, by the way. And he won that, and then, you know, he competed against Johnson. He's competed against all the top guys over the years. So that's where that respect comes from Nicolau. But, you know, business is business, and it was pretty clear to be 1-1 going into round three. Except of the two, Elliot seemed to be a little bit more like he was the one that could probably, or he was the one that was going to be fresher and ready to do something in the third round. In the third round, he comes out and he's Tim Elliott as usual, you know, kind of moving around a little awkwardly like he does, hands down, feinting, kicking, punching, things like that. And then he gets taken down. But rather than looking to get up, he had a closed guard. He would lock up, you know, from underneath. He'd get underhooks on Nicolau, and he kind of rode out round three rather than trying to get up. I believe that the first 3 minutes were a slight Elliott advantage, just slight, not much. But Mateus Nicolau was able to sway the pendulum to his side, like we've talked about in the past, due to him being on top and then having some ground and pound. And in a fight where if maybe Elliott gets back up and mitigates some of that advantage on the ground and maybe, you know, gets his own takedown or just gets back to outstriking him, he could have possibly won round three and gone home with two checks. Now, what we find out is that James Krause told him, you've won the first two, and so that's why it was more about don't get hammered, don't get finished in round three. We should win this 29-28. So I want to commend James Krause for being so straightforward and, you know, talking about this and standing by his guy. I thought that was outstanding. It doesn't give me my money back. I had Tim Elliott on a live bet. But what are you going to do, man? That's just gambling on sports.
Yeah, I mean, watching it live and then hearing what James Krause said makes a lot of sense. I do commend James Krause for coming out and saying that. It takes a lot of pressure off of his fighter. Maybe even in the matchmaker's eyes, right? In the UFC's eyes. Maybe a little bit of them may not penalize Tim Elliott because of a statement like that. But I will say this. I think even the same way we say coaches should never tell fighters that, I would probably gamble to say fighters should never take that seriously. Because we just don't know. There's times where all of us who have great views at home, we're scoring these fights wrong. Sometimes we think we're scoring it right, and the judges have something completely different. So I think to kind of tie somebody up like that was a mistake for Tim Elliott. Even though his coaches told him he was up 2-0, I think he shouldn't have rolled that dice. I think he should have rolled the dice and just been a little bit more active. I mean, he had already survived the first two rounds, and I just felt like he could have taken a little bit more chance. Nobody was saying, you know, give him your back or anything like that, but just make a better attempt at getting up or maybe throw some strikes from the bottom a little bit more. I mean, it was just a full-on tie-up for a while. And so I think if we're going to put a little bit of blame on James Krause, I think it's fair to put some blame on Tim Elliott as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say maybe even 50-50, 60-40 each way, whatever you want to decide, for sure. You have to put some on Elliott because he finally is the one that is in there. And you're right. Unless you absolutely mollywop someone, there are times where you just really don't know if you got that round. Best thing to do is just win every round, or never stop going for the finish. So yeah, blame goes to both, but you're right, and you highlighted something important. James Krause saying what he said might take some pressure off Tim Elliott when it comes to the matchmakers, you know, because both guys are respected. I think if this was a young fighter and a young coach, it may not carry as much weight, but coming from James Krause about Tim Elliott, I think Tim Elliott will be okay. He'll be able to survive this. Now, it's still a little bit of a setback, but I wouldn't call it that the 18-month, two-year setback like I often say about, you know, fighters that lose big fights. I'm usually saying that about guys that are like number three, probably number two to number five in that range. When you're number two or number one, you know, you're knocking on the door. And if you take a loss, then whoever beats you, they're next. And then three, four, and five aren't shabby either. But in Tim Elliott's case, he can maybe get an impressive win and he'll be okay. Here, I'll give you an example. Calvin Kattar lost to Max Holloway viciously in January of this year. Calvin Kattar hasn't been heard of pretty much all year. And that's probably a good thing because he took a lot of damage. He probably needed to rest his brain, rest his body, and just get over that loss mentally. Now, in the meantime, Max Holloway hasn't been able to he hasn't been able to get a title shot out of that win. We all gave him praise for how good he looked, and despite losing to Alexander Volkanovski twice in title fights, he still, you know, hasn't fought him, and he's still not technically next because he's got a fight coming up against Yair Rodriguez. But Calvin Kattar is fighting Giga Chikadze, who's hot right now. So if Kattar can beat Giga Chikadze, guess who's back in the ballgame? You know, especially if Max Holloway loses to Yair Rodriguez, all of a sudden he's back. So that's what I was saying about somebody like a Tim Elliott. This loss to Nicolaus stings a little bit, but if he can catch somebody else in about 3-4 months and win, then maybe he's back in. Each division is different.
That's true. That's very true.
Randy Brown defeated Jared Gooden. Now, this fight doesn't carry too many implications in terms of 170. Oh, you know, somebody's a title contender or anything. I will say this. I really enjoyed listening a lot to Randy Brown during his post-fight interview, his post-fight media that he did. And quick plug for the YouTube channel that we have where we have all of that. YouTube.com/MMA Junkie Video. He just seemed like a real dude and had great answers and was very lively. But now zeroing in, I think, on what everybody wants to know, his toe. Randy Brown dislocated his big toe. And every time you saw him stepping on it, that was him putting it back in place himself. So he dislocated it, and then he lodged it back in, and then it dislocated again, and then he lodged it back in. So anyway, he'll probably need to get that done, you know, and maybe tape it for his next fight or just let it heal or whatever. I don't know if this will be something that will, you know, hurt him going forward, like if it'll just always do that. But, you know, to fight through that, man, that had to be mentally tough against a guy that hits as hard as Gooden. But he stayed in there. He switched his stances, you know, so that he could, I guess, stay in the game as best as possible. So it was very, very impressive from a guy that's been in the UFC who I haven't given much thought to. I see his name a lot. I see him fight. I've probably bet on him. I've probably bet against him. But he hasn't occupied any time or any space in my head. I just know that's Randy Brown, UFC veteran. Okay, let's fight. Good, cool. But now that I got to hear that interview, man, that was some really, really cool stuff, you know, coming from him. And, you know, he really wants to fight on the New York card. He's from Jamaica, Queens. Calls himself a true New Yorker. And, you know, if the toe isn't hurt too bad, he'd like to. He doesn't know if it's possible. But, again, I recommend everybody go and listen to that. What did you think of him fighting through that injury, Goz?
I think it was a really gutsy performance, and he deserves to get praise for that. But I think where he deserves the most praise is his fight IQ, because I felt like he won that fight because he used his length. He used the distance. He just kept pumping that jab. He was always first to everything. But what I heard about that injury, that particular injury, that toe, is I hear once that thing kind of loosens up like that, it tends to just do that for the rest of your life. So hopefully there's a surgery or something. But I do remember hearing that. I think it was in the NFL. It was a player that had something kind of similar. And I heard it's like that with shoulders as well. But the dude totally fought through it, man. I mean, you got to give him all the props in the world. But don't forget, it was a great game plan, and it was great execution of that game plan, I think, that won him that fight.
Well, it definitely happened a lot to Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon series. He definitely would always have to pop that shoulder back in. But I don't know, maybe he can tape his two big toes together, or maybe there's a surgery to correct. Remember in the 80s, if he had a detached retina, it was a career ender in boxing. And now it's a surgery and some time off, and you're back in the game. So we'll see. Let's get to the main event. Marina Rodriguez versus Mackenzie Dern. I get tired of saying it, but that's all you can say is what it is, and that's a traditional grappler versus striker matchup. Mackenzie Dern, look, is one the highest levels of submission grappling, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. She's got those medals, all right? And she's the son of a legend in Megaton Diaz. So she basically grew up on the mats. That's why she's so good, and that's why she's got that type of jiu-jitsu that's just like another level. Almost like how we talked about Brian Ortega recently. And so we knew that if the fight got there, there could be some trouble. That's Volkanovski. Volkanovski said two submissions were very, very tight. He almost lost his title. Well, same thing. Can she get the fight to the ground where she's dominant? That was the question. Marina Rodriguez, we knew, can strike, is a great striker, but on the ground, she's a fish out of water. And so that's why it was two contrasting styles. So eventually, what did happen? Well, she did get the fight to the ground. She had some opportunities in two different rounds. And Marina Rodriguez was able to get out of everything that Mackenzie Dern was, you know, throwing her way. And so that's why most of this fight was actually contested on the feet, because aside from those two opportunities, she was able to stuff takedowns and keep the fight, you know, standing. And then Mackenzie Dern, who has improved her hands, she just couldn't compete with Marina Rodriguez, who's more longer and has more power, more accurate, more polished.
That's the thing. Like, if you're in Mackenzie Dern's camp, the best case scenario happened. Like, she was able to get her down, and she did have quite a bit time to work a submission while they were probably still pretty dry, but she just couldn't pull it off. And then what happened was just her energy started to go away. And you're right, she has improved her hands, but even she's kind of admitted it. They're a little sloppy at times, you know? And Marina Rodriguez is just more of a traditional striker, uses those angles, did a good job of keeping her back away from the fence, constantly moving. She had a pretty good game plan as well. And she was able to survive when things didn't go her way. But the performance was pretty impressive. The thing about Mackenzie Dern is she could probably suffer a loss like this and be right back in another fight. And people are going to want to see her, you know, because she's fun to watch. And she has that one pedigree that, you know, anytime you're looking at a champion, you always go, ooh, what if Mackenzie gets her down, right? So I think she can survive this. I think she's still getting better. So we'll see. We'll see where Mackenzie Dern is. Maybe a year from now, she could be right back in the same spot she was. So, but can't take away from Marina Rodriguez. That was a pretty damn good performance.
Well, check it out. If you're holding Mackenzie Dern stock, it has happened before. She started off 7-0, as we all know. She came over through LFA and then Invicta, I think a pit stop in Invicta. So she got to 7-0 with wins over Montana De La Rosa, Ashley Yoder, Amanda Cooper along the way. Then she takes her first hit a couple years ago against Amanda Hebus. So from 7-0, she went to 7-1. But then she got past Hannah Cyphers, Randa Marcos, Verna Jandruroba, and Nina Nunes, formerly Nina Ansaroff. So she got to then 11-1. So she's been able to shake off losses and then come back and perform. So I think you have to just believe in her and her coaches that she'll learn from the loss and take, you know, a step forward. And then from Marina Rodriguez, from her side of things, if you'll recall, you know, she kind of came in also a hot item, a hot ticket. She was, let me see, when she got to the UFC, she was at 9-0 at Dana White Contenders, the series. Then she starts fighting Randa Markos. She got her draw there. Then Jessica Aguilar and Tisha Torres. She drew with Cynthia Calvillo. Then she loses. She takes that loss to Carla Esparza, where I'm sure after that she started working on her wrestling a lot. Since then, she's beaten Amanda Ribas, Michelle Waterson, and Mackenzie Dern. So both ladies kind of have similar runs there, you know, where they've had the setback against a, you know, a top-notch fighter in the division, got checked, and then continued progressing. So I expect to see both of them, you know, in this division for a long time as top contenders. It's what was interesting to see them meet this time. I think they'll meet again, but on this night, Marina Rodriguez was the better fighter.
I think it's cool that, you know, they had their main event status, and it was a fun fight, I thought, and the ladies really brought it on this card. When you go through the bonuses, we'll find out about that. But I think both girls, I wouldn't say Mackenzie Dern's star got brighter, but people know who she is. Rodriguez, on the other hand, yeah, I do think her star got a little bit brighter. Not just in the fight, but even post fight.
Yeah, definitely. So that was your card. You know, there was only 9 fights on this fight card, and it took some hits along the way, and some crazy stuff happened on Friday. But here are some of the fights that were lost: Mike Trezano versus Chad Skelly, Phil Haas versus Daron Wynn, Liorano Staropoli versus Jamie Pickett, and Lupita Godinez versus Sam Hughes. So we know Godinez wound up fighting because they got a replacement for Sam Hughes. Trezano and Skelly remained off the card. Haas and Daron Wynn remained off the card. Staropoli and Pickett remained off the card. But in the situation with Haas and Daron Wynn, boy, that was crazy. First, we had Chris Curtis willing to step in for Daron Wynn, but Phil Haas declined it. So then James Krause was willing to fight Chris Curtis. Now, Chris Curtis is a former PFL fighter. He's won 5 in a row, very quietly, by the way, because the last time I saw Chris Curtis fighting, he had lost to, if I'm not mistaken, was Magomed Sharipov in PFL via decision. But then when he went back to the locker room, because they were doing 2 fights in one night, there was a situation where he was brought back as a replacement to fight Ray Cooper III, and then he got viciously knocked out. So trust me, that was not a good night for Chris Curtis to lose 2 times. I mean, he lost to 2 gangsters, don't get me wrong, but still, that Ray Cooper KO was horrific. Now, if you're on the Ray Cooper side, it was one of the greatest KOs ever. That's one of the fights that we talked about where the Ray Cooper gang just went nuts. The arena went nuts. But unfortunately, the victim was Chris Curtis. Cool guy. We see him all the time in Las Vegas. But I did not know he had amassed a 5-fight win streak. And that's why he was looked at as someone that could possibly step in and be involved in this quartet here with Dawes, Wynn, Krause, and Curtis. In the end, Krause did not officially weigh in, and there was no fight, but it was nuts the way it was unfolding.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons it caught everybody by surprise is, like, if you haven't really kept up on Chris Curtis, there was a moment where he just decided that's the end of his career, and then he decided to come back, and he has been doing pretty well. What I don't know, George, and maybe you could educate me on this, is I'm curious, what happens with Chris Curtis now? Does the UFC go, well, all right, we'll give you another fight? Or were they only willing to do it because of the situation? Because Chris Curtis is a guy that, like, you've always wanted to see be able to get his shot. I think there's different routes. I don't know if it's already been decided, but the UFC could always do if there's an Ultimate Fighter available or a Dana White's Contender Series, something like that. Or they could just say, hey, man, here's a fight. Thanks for offering to step in and do that, doing a solid. Or they could just say, hey, thanks for the time, but we'll look in another direction. I don't know what happened to Chris Curtis.
I think it's the second one. I think they appreciate someone stepping up, weighing in. And the fact that he's 5-0 since those losses, he's local and licensed apparently and ready to go. So they need that. And I think I even answered the question accidentally without us knowing we're going to talk about it. when I said, guess what? There was only 9 fights. You know, fights are just falling apart all the time and they have so many cards. So he's basically a body. I don't want to disrespect him and say he's not UFC worthy. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they need bodies, and they need bodies that can fight when they need them, you know, so a drop of a dime. And if you're even local, even better, because you're already there in Las Vegas. So I think at this point, he probably earned himself a contract based on the body of work of his career and the fact that he was a good, you know, company employee for all of 2 hours or whatever. But I'm hoping that's the situation. I don't have any insight, though.
Okay.
Now, let's get to the historical significance of the card. And Ghost teased it. 4 fighters got bonuses on Saturday.
4?
And, yep. All 4 fighters were women. Marina Rodriguez and Mackenzie Dern for Fight of the Night. Lupita Godinez and Maria Agapova, they got performances of the night. So congratulations to all of them. That's the first night. Sorry, the first fight night. Yeah, the first fight night where, you know, fight night or pay-per-views were, again, all the female fighters were female. Sorry, all the fighters were female. I'm trying to say too many things at one time, but what I wanted to say was, did you have any beef, you know, in terms of like, well, you know, they kind of could have given it to this fighter or that fighter. I mean, Romanoff was pretty vicious on top of Van der Raa. Agapova, really, I know it was a submission, but it was one hell of a performance. That punch was incredible.
You have to give her one.
Huh?
You have to give her one. You have to give Rodriguez one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think basically it was accurate. I don't think they said, you know, we're getting close to just being able to give, you know, all the females on the card a bonus, and that could be history. I don't think they forced it on us, that's for sure. So I scanned the card real quick, and you don't seem to have a strong opinion towards them not getting it, and neither do I. So good for them. And by the way, this isn't us nitpicking, you know, women getting all the bonuses. We kind of do this every time. We always look at it and go, could they have gone here? Could they have gone there? And then we leave it at that. And obviously, if somebody was close, we hope for them to get a discretionary bonus. But I think it's cool. I think it's cool. And you know, I'm sure it won't be the last time.
Yeah, it might take a minute for that to happen again, but I don't think the UFC did it on purpose. I honestly think it just played out that way.
Yeah. All right, let's hammer the news. So we'll start with, let me see. I want to end on a good note, so let's just go with Luis Pena arrested again. It happened in June. He was arrested on misdemeanor domestic violence, and I'm not even sure what's going on with that case. We covered this kind of in the John Jones case, where usually what happens with a misdemeanor, it gets pled down, and that's why they don't really have jail time other than when they're arrested, and then they're able to bond out, and hopefully I'm getting these terms correct. I read up on this, and I think I got it pretty right, but different states call it different things. But in the case of what happened the other night, it looks like there's two. He's arrested for 2 counts of different forms of domestic violence. And when you've done this before, I got to believe there's some sort of a probation. So this one could wind up being worse. And I apologize. In June, it was felony charges of robbery, battery, and criminal mischief. On this one, he was arrested for misdemeanor charges of domestic violence and battery. So, you know, what's going to happen here? This is the part where we don't know, because I would imagine he's got to go to a hearing and see how all this stacks up. You know, one event, meaning June, on top of this event here in October. It can't be good, especially when they're this close together. Back then, he stated that he thought some of this might be due to he's going through a lot, and a lot of it had to do with mental illness. And then he actually encouraged people to reach out and talk about mental illness if they are struggling So, you know, we basically don't have the time, and I don't have the interest, honestly, to follow up on each fighter when this happens at the time. We just move on and go on, and we wish every person the best. So I don't know if he got himself any help. He hasn't fought, so we haven't communicated. We haven't had a reason to interview the guy or anything and see, you know, whether we do it personally or whether it's part of a fight week. It just hasn't been addressed because he hasn't fought since then. The last time he fought was in April at UFC on ESPN 22 when he beat Alexander Munoz. But throughout June and October, he hasn't had a fight lined up or anything. And he goes, what are your thoughts on Violent Bob Ross?
It's an unfortunate situation because anytime you have somebody that has talent the way he does, like he's actually fun to watch. I feel like he's still getting better. I think he's a fighter that's improving. But whenever you see them not be able to do what they love to do, it just kind of sucks, man. And I'm one of those guys that needs to see more information come out and all that, but it's really not looking too good for him.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I do also want to read up down below because the story was updated, and maybe that's why it caused some confusion here, as I was also relaying, you know, some of the pertinent details from this what happened. It says the statement provided by the Broward Sheriff's Office has been included above. In addition, a correction was made to correct Pena's charges, which were initially listed as felonies. According to the statement release, both charges are misdemeanors. So we'll see what happens, how this plays out. Is it basically where there's smoke, there's fire? You know, what can be happening behind the scenes? I don't know. It's hard to speculate. But on the real, usually when that is happening, you know, just like John Jones's fiance hinted in her conversations with that security guard and what he was relaying to the 911 operator, something like this similar has happened again. We don't know the details. We don't know if punches or kicks have been thrown in the past or somebody getting, you know, pushed. That's the part we don't know. But what we do know is they're in a position where it can escalate and when it does escalate, I guess something can be ugly. Obviously the easiest thing is for you to turn, do a 180 and just get away from the situation and prevent that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we really don't know, but, it just sucks when you see one of these headlines that, you want the most positivity in the sport. You know, you want guys to be praised. You want to see them on that ESPN top 10. So whenever, especially, you know, nowadays, some of these fighters are just getting in trouble outside the cage, and we don't need that. You know, this is a sport that needs to grow. We need to make more fans, not take away.
And these fighters are in a position where they're making better money. They have better opportunities. They don't have the pressures of having to chase down sponsors for their shorts or tell stories of sponsors not paying them or, you know, like they actually, like I say, seem to be in a pretty decent situation where if you put a couple fights together and a couple wins together and the next thing you know, you're in your second contract, your life can really change, especially if you get a bonus along the way. And so to now just piss it all away, you know, by not being able to control your personal life, it's kind of sad, you know, because think about how many fighters in the old era didn't have this kind of money, and they had to either keep another job or they just didn't lead as fancy of a lifestyle as prize fighting, you know, should allow them to lead. And I feel like some of these young fighters are just blowing it, man.
Totally.
Yeah. What did you think of Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder? You know, we had America versus UK. It's been a fun series watching these guys fight, but I think Fury kind of just shut down this rivalry for now.
Well, I think anytime you have heavyweights in boxing, it's a good thing when you have two good heavyweights fighting. And they really did deliver. You know, they both had their moments. It was a great fight. I think it's been a great trilogy. But the problem is boxing needs more of this. Usually when a boxing star is fighting, it's a one-sided matchup. It's very rare that you get a very competitive fight out of some of these guys at the top, right? Whenever you hear Canelo Alvarez versus, your mouth just doesn't water as much because he's been through everyone already. And so at the top of the heavyweight division, you have some fights that are possibly intriguing. I hope boxing can carry that momentum. I know this is MMA junkie, but we grew up boxing fans. I want them to be successful as well. And I just thought it was a great fight. We all got to watch this at our buddy's house, and everybody was into it. The fight delivered, I thought. The crowd seemed to be really into it. It's in Vegas, where these big fights, I believe, deserve to be. I know as of late, there have been other venues, man, around, not just in the States, but around the world, that have been getting some pretty big fights. And I always feel like something of this magnitude has to happen in Las Vegas, and I'm glad it did.
I would agree with that. And so now Tyson Fury has got a record of 31-0-1 against Deontay Wilder. He's got two decisive wins against Deontay Wilder. He's also got two fights where Deontay Wilder was close to winning both as well. And, you know, it's just a bummer, you know, that this isn't like 1-1-1 and we get to see a fourth. Like, it'll take a little bit, but you never know. But it'll take a little bit before we can, if we are able to see these. Wilder was definitely bigger than I've seen him in other fights. Maybe the added muscle is what had him. It seemed like after round four, when he knocked him down twice and then he won a couple more rounds, it seemed like he was tiring and maybe he was getting to Fury. But then Fury just caught a second win, man, and towards the end, Fury was just too much, you know. You could tell at that point it was a matter of time. But make no mistake, Wilder actually put him down twice in one round. He was starting to threaten. There was a chance there that maybe he could, you know, if he could just be precise with his 1-2s or maybe land an uppercut, maybe he could get to Fury. But it just there just wasn't enough, and he was letting Fury land on him. And then, boy, that punch that put him down was ugly.
Yeah, it was a solid punch. And I started thinking about something you said. I'm trying to think who actually had the best punch of the night. I was a pretty good one, but I still think MMA won that one.
MMA? Oh.
Mato took a crack, man.
Yeah. She did. She did, man. Okay. I was like, wait a minute. Marina Rodriguez? Okay. Got you. James Krause, look, I guess we kind of already talked about it when we talked about it, Tim Elliott, but he put out a statement immediately saying that was my bad. I told him he was up 2-0. But I guess just further to that, you know, and this may actually become a topic on SBC tomorrow. I'm a part of it tomorrow. I was kind of throwing it out. But yeah, in case it gets shut down over there, at least me and you got to say something about it today. I thought this was really, really big. You know, in other sports, a coach goes is maybe not the top most influential member of a team, but sometimes he can be in the top three or the top five. Example, Tom Brady, it looks like, appears to have shown he was the guy in New England. Even if you're pro Belichick, you have to accept that Brady would then went on and won a Super Bowl title, and then since facing Belichick, he's beaten Belichick. So I think you have to accept, all right, you know, it was him, it wasn't Belichick. But Belichick wasn't far behind. You know, New England plugged and played a lot of other positions, but the coach and the quarterback were there. Think of Mike Krzyzewski in Duke. Think of Nick Saban in Alabama. You know, they rotate their players, but arguably the coach may be one of the more important figures. Well, here in our sport, coaches, there's a few that get a lot of love, but I want to give a lot of credit to James Krause, man, for saying what he said. I think it'll gain him a lot of respect from his own fighters, and I think it'll allow him to continue growing because he doesn't have a big enough ego to think he's infallible, you know? Other sports teach you losses a lot more often than MMA does, especially if you don't coach many fighters. Like, think about the last time Trevor Whitman lost. I guess it'd be Gaethje against Khabib, but before that, I mean, Kamaru's been winning, Rose has been winning, you know what I'm saying? So sometimes is the drive there? Do you do you grow as a coach? Because everything's, you know, everything's going the right way. So, but I think James Krause did a great thing, and I hope more coaches speak up, you know, because they're an integral part of a fighter's career.
Yeah, he fell on that grenade for sure. I mean, I just don't know. I'm happy he did it. I think it's going to help Tim Elliott. It's just weird. I don't know. I have kind of conflicting opinions of it. I just think he did a good job being a good coach and being a good friend.
Agreed. All right. What about Conor McGregor? He just cannot get Dustin Poirier out of his head. While giving props to Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder for a great match, a great boxing match on Saturday, he still managed to say, you know, this was different from an opponent who takes, you know, who gloats in the combat arena while somebody who's hasn't been defeated but has rather maybe, you know, broken a bone, lays there. And so basically what he's trying to say again is you guys had a great trilogy. You settled it with your fists. I was just a part of a trilogy that ended in controversy. Not, you know, neglecting to still give Dustin Poirier the edge that he's won two clear fights and Conor's lost one.
I'm okay with him making that point, but he's tried to make that point too many times. Do it once, put it out there. But now that he tries to do it at every opportunity that he gets, and it kind of almost looks stalkerish at this point. Like, I just don't get it, man. He's Conor McGregor. He should be proud of a lot of things that he's been able to do in the sport. But right now, I think he's giving Dustin Poirier a lot of advantages over him. It's looking like a little brother, big brother type scenario. And you got to give Dustin Poirier his credit because he won those fights. But Conor McGregor is giving him too much clout in trying to make him look bad. He's just making himself look bad.
Yeah, I agree. I think Conor's ship has sailed in one regard, and that's that if he fights Poirier, it'll be for a title shot. I don't think the UFC can do this one because they're in a very, very stacked division. But the minute Poirier signed to fight Oliveira, if Poirier wins and he's champ, I just don't think McGregor's first fight back will be Poirier. You know, Poirier's going to have a lot of bodies that he's going to have to possibly defend against, and I just don't know that one of them would be McGregor. Now, had he not signed on to fight Oliveira and he just waited for part four against McGregor, then I'd be like, well, kid, if you don't want it, then fine. Stick around and fight McGregor for the fourth time and you guys make a boatload of money. But I guess you won't be undisputed champ for now. But the minute Poirier did sign up, I'm thinking, I don't know that McGregor just walks into a title shot 1 year later just because it's Poirier, if Poirier wins.
I mean, anything can happen when it comes to the UFC, but more so when it comes to Conor McGregor. But yeah, this one would be crazy to sell. I really don't. I mean, other than drawing two money bags and just going, there is really no argument here.
Yeah, because think about it. The winner of Gaethje and Chandler has a lot of buzz behind him. And then Islam Makhachev, if he beats Dan Hooker, he's on quite a run. You know what I mean? So, oof. And what if Oliveira and Dustin Poirier is a classic? You know, it could be a classic and maybe it needs to be ran back. So I think for now, with McGregor knowing all this, I think McGregor should just stop even bringing up Poirier's name. Maybe go after Nate Diaz. Well, focus on getting better for one. But then when you do come back, maybe go against Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz ain't going to kick your leg, so your leg ain't going to be tested there. You're just going to have to throw hands against Nate Diaz. So all you have to do is get in shape for five rounds and fight Nate Diaz. And that's that. You'll settle that. You'll make a lot of money. And if you beat him, then I think by then the winner of Gaethje and Chandler will have had their shot. Possibly even Islam Makhachev may have had his shot. You know, I don't know. By then, some time will have gone by and maybe Poirier will be left there waiting for you, and you guys can have your fourth run. That, yes. But right now, it doesn't look like I see anything foreseeable between those two. So why even bring him up?
He's got to stop bringing up his name. He just has to.
Rob Font admitted that he was approached to fight Peter Yan instead of Corey Sandhagen, except he was recovering from COVID, and he decided no, he'd rather fight Jose Aldo 6 weeks later. Agree or disagree, Goz?
I agree with him, but the UFC doesn't always seem to agree with fighters in this situation. I don't think they take too kindly to fighters disagreeing or saying no. But I think he made the right move. It's still a high-profile fight. A win here still puts him right back in that same position. I mean, COVID's a bitch, man. Like, I don't forget that this sport is also dangerous. And you only have so many opportunities in the sport. So I kind of agree with Rob Font on this one. You?
Yeah, well, they gave him Jose Aldo anyway. So, you know, I think Jose Aldo's either won two or three in a row. So I think they still think highly of him. And COVID is just something that it knocked the wind out of Volkanovski. It knocked the wind out of Khamzat Chimaev, Amanda Nunes. So I think the UFC probably will give him a pass. We'll see. Calvin Kattar versus Giga Chikadze still being talked about, but I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about that on another occasion. Once it's already set and maybe we're getting closer, you know, I kind of addressed it earlier when I said, when I was talking about, you know, examples of how Elliott could fight someone else and then be back in the mix. Example, well, what Calvin Kattar's doing after losing to Holloway, should he beat Giga Chikadze? How about Joe Briggs? He broke Melvin Gillard's orbital bone and off the heels of a death in BKFC. What are your thoughts on BKFC? Do we just got to accept it's more violent, more carnal, more brutal than MMA? And it is what it is?
I don't know. I'm going back and forth on this a little bit. I was of the opinion that, yeah, it's a little bit more brutal, but it's not always brutal. Like, not every match is, you know, there's not blood spilling everywhere. But holy crap, you know, in the last couple cards, there's been some pretty bad ones. There was a gal, I don't know if you saw her eye, how swolled up it was. And then Melvin Gillard with the orbital. But then the thing is, like, I mean, orbitals break all the time in boxing and MMA as well. So I can't tell if maybe we're being a little bit more critiqueful on these on Bare Knuckle because of what happened. Because had that not happened with the death and due to that fight, somebody breaking the orbital bone in the combat sports is not that rare. It happens from time to time.
And to be fair, when we did talk about the death, a lot of the blame we felt went to the lack of the matchmaking,
right?
You know, the parity there. And with Gillard and Briggs, the only thing you could really say is, you know, Gillard was mostly a 55er in MMA, and Riggs at one time fought as a heavyweight. But to be fair, I think he probably fought, I'd say 75% of the time at 170. So that's not too far away from Gillard. I think Gillard even dabbled at 70 and Riggs dabbled with 85. So there, I think that one was pretty fair in terms of probably, you know, the amount of experience they both have. So that one's a little bit different. And yes, it's a violent sport and stuff's going to happen. The one that had the death, I think we had 11-2 versus 6-18. You can't be doing that one. So we'll see, man. God, a lot went on, man. You know, between BKFC, Fury versus Wilder. Heck, we were watching kids fight on Saturday night. Any quick thoughts on Hendo's Fight Night 6 in Temecula?
Dude, it was actually pretty fun. If you've ever been to his gym, when he was talking about how many people were going to actually be there, I just kept thinking, there's no way you're going to have this many people in here. And somehow they configured it so that they were able to fit quite a bit of people. It was fun, man. It was fun to watch the fights, have some drinks, eat some food. They did have the kids compete, but, you know, they had the proper headgear and padding and all that, and they had certain rule sets for them. But, yeah, overall, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Me too. They said they would – have less matches with kids. And by the way, look towards an off guard video that we did with Joe Daddy Stevenson, winner of the Ultimate Fighter Season 2, a UFC title challenger versus BJ Penn at lightweight. He talks about some work that he's doing with Hendo, where possibly there could be some amateur MMA in the Olympics. But yeah, the kids, we were first told it could be pancrase style, and if they struck each other in the head, it would be open hand. But what they did was they changed the rules. They went punches to the body only. Everything else seemed to go. They had shin pads when they were kicking each other. The rounds weren't five rounds. They were two-minute rounds. So they made some adjustments. It was cool. But then they got into what I thought was teenagers. Not necessarily. It felt like they went from kids to kind of teenagers or really, really young guys. And we were starting to get to the adults. But I'll tell you what, man, those kids have – they're in shape, man. They have good stamina. They're explosive. There's some young talent coming through in that area of California. If that was all like Marietta and Temecula and Wildemar, whatever, I don't know. If it was or wasn't, maybe even Paris, Moreno Valley. There's some maybe some possible talent to look forward to in the next few years.
I was not training at that age. I can't imagine how you would tell a kid at that age. Don't forget, you got to get your miles in. You got to get your rounds in when most of them are on their phone or playing video games or something. Very commendable.
Yeah, for sure. So if you ever hear of Hendo's Fight Night 7 sometime in the next few months, go check it out in the Temecula area. I think you'll really, really enjoy it. Tickets were as cheap as $10. And there wasn't a bad seat in the house. So anyway, all right, with that, we're going to be peace out. Peace out for now. Obviously, we'll have our second show of the week. And as you can tell, we're on schedule. We'll probably do it late Wednesday for early Thursday delivery. And thank you, as always, for your support. I do want to give one quick shout out. It's to Daryl Gordon 603 on Instagram. He's at dgordon 603. But otherwise, from what I've been able to uncover, he's Daryl Gordon. He left a real nice comment. Goes, when we posted, I don't know if you noticed, but I posted a picture of myself with that Rings King of Kings tournament from 1999, you know, that trophy that they gave Hendo. And the picture that you took, Hendo's in the back photobombing. It's actually kind of funny. But Daryl left a comment, along with a few others, the Silverback, Nick from Vancouver. But he left a comment, hey, came looking for you guys at Mandalay Bay. Didn't see you, but he did see Nick Diaz. And so I told him, hey, listen, we'll probably be back in a few weeks, maybe December. And he said, keep up the great work. He wanted me to pass that on to you guys. So thank you, Daryl, for supporting the show. Thanks for coming by Mandalay Bay. And just to give everyone a quick explanation, Mandalay Bay is kind of open their sports book, their studio to many shows. So it doesn't have kind of our blueprint like it did before, where it was the cage and it said all MMA Junkie Radio. It's now prepared to host a bunch of different shows. But because of COVID rules, masks, no masks, things like that, and challenges with equipment, because obviously we've set up studios at home, we haven't been able to make a full return there yet. But we have been told it's still a home for us. So we will plan on going back there and start doing some taping. But just as we got that news, Goz and I came on to our vacation weeks, our birthday weeks, so we really haven't even had time to go back to Vegas and even start attacking that. So anyway, but thanks, Daryl, for stopping by the Mandalay Bay and saying what's up. I wish we could have been there, said hello, and thank you to all of you, like Daryl, that continue to download the show and leave nice comments like this one.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl. We could, like George said, we could do a show, but we'd have to wear a mask, and we would basically sound like this, and that's just really hard to broadcast that way.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to get on out of here, folks. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. This week, it's Aspen Ladd against Norma Dumont, and you got the Bellator 268 card, which features the semifinals for the Light Heavyweight Grand Prix, along with Benson Henderson returning. Former WC, former UFC lightweight champ. Look for one of those interviews that we did with him, and he talks about how much the Bellator lightweight title would mean if he could add that to his trophy case. So those fight cards this week, but we'll still have another show this week where we'll talk more about those upcoming cards. All right, folks, we're out of here for now. Go out there and be a champion.